Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Friday, and welcome to Alive to Thrive with Brenda Fraser. Each week, Brenda brings you interesting guests and timely topics to uplift and motivate you to be all that you can be today and for all your tomorrows. Join Brenda and Alive to Thrive every Friday at noon Central Time, right here on Greater Good Ministries Radio. And now, here's Brenda Fraser.
Hello, and welcome to Alive to Thrive. I am so thrilled to be with you all today. Welcome from wherever you're listening around the country. My guest today is the State Director for the Greater Missouri Chapter of the Mark Dimes. And we actually met over social media a couple of years ago. I think we identified each other as people that were, you know, sort of forward-thinking, dynamic, and I've had the honor and pleasure of hearing Mary Elizabeth Grimes share a little bit about her personal story at an event recently in St. Louis, and it moved me to tears as well as just was so inspiring. So I'm excited for our guest today. Mary Elizabeth, welcome. How are you?
I am great, and I love the title of your show. That is absolutely the way we should all wake up each day and say, I am alive so I can thrive.
Exactly, exactly. And, I mean, you just sum it all up. When I heard you speak at the Safe Connections lunch a few months ago, first of all, I admired your honesty and your courage to share a very deeply personal story, and in order to uplift other women and to show other women that they can overcome adversity and personal violence and challenges that every single person faces in life in some shape or manner, but women especially, more often than not, are victims of crime, sexual violence crimes and crimes in their home and a place where we think we're safe, but tragically sometimes we're not safe at the hands of spouses or at the hands of strangers. And I wanted to, before we get into talking about your professional career, which is very extensive and we have a lot to talk about with brand marketing and fundraising and strategic visioning for nonprofit organizations. If you would, I would like to revisit that story just because I think it does demonstrate so powerfully what my listeners need to hear, and that is no circumstance can define your life and nothing can limit you from going to the places you want to go to with your work and with your personal and professional life. So, Mary Elizabeth, if you would kindly, can you share a little bit about the story that you shared that day at Safe Connections?
Sure, I'm happy to. And the reason that I talk about it is that I have lived my life beyond it. I believe that people should not be defined by the things that they have experienced. We are greater than our circumstances. And once you really embrace that, then you begin to see life differently, and then life itself paints a very different picture for you. So the experience that I had was one of being in a marriage where at some point in the marriage there was domestic abuse, and I did divorce my husband, but I remained in the marital home, and I was also a single parent as a result. I hired a nanny, and the nanny was followed by a stalker, and he followed her to my home, and she let him in, not knowing the circumstances, and he physically assaulted her and raped her. And then when I got home, I just happened to stop into the home in the middle of the day, and he was there. I tried to escape, not knowing that the nanny was also there, but I tried to escape and was unable to do so. So we were, you know, both tied up and assaulted. And as I said, I did have my my daughter, but fortunately she was not at home at the time. But his threat before he left us was if I called the police, he knew where my daughter was in child care, and that if he didn't do it himself, he would send someone to the school and playground and stab her. So my thought at that time was, you know, first of all, to do whatever I could to get the bondage that he left us in off, and then call the daycare. That was my first thought, was my child's safety, and then after that I did call the police. So that's my story. They did catch him. But, you know, obviously afterwards, with the home being a place where I had experienced two kinds of abuse. And, you know, that was one of the things that I said at the presentation, is rape is not a sexual act. It is an act of violence. And so I was pretty broken after both situations, but people said you should move from your home, and that was the operative word, was home. And I felt that these experiences should not dictate what I wanted to do with my life and how I wanted to have a place for my daughter to be. So I just worked toward getting on the other side of that emotional trauma and realizing more of who I am and what strength was given me.
So what were some of the things you did to strengthen your inner resolve and your resiliency to get to that other side? What kind of spiritual tools did you use, and what kind of mentors, you know, and support?
Well, I appreciate that you identified those two things specifically, because that is, you know, my spiritual strength is the source of, you know, of all that I am, and that was very much a part of what drew me out of that dark place, and certainly having other like-minded and like-spirited individuals to support me in that was critically important. You know, I'm very fortunate to have a loving family, and that certainly helped as well, and very good friends. So surrounding yourself with people who can reinforce and remind you of who you are. Again, going back to the presentation, one of the things that I shared with everyone is that you are not, that experience. You are, if you're in a domestic situation, oftentimes you are called certain names and you are not those names. And what I said to them is what you are is enough. And we don't often present ourselves as that. If you ask someone to describe who they are and what they represent, they'll say something to the effect of, well, I'm this and that, but I would be happier if I were, these other things as well. And if we see ourselves as whole first, the other just becomes, nice little embellishments, but not things that fill a void because you are less than.
Mm-hmm. So there are different books I've been reading around women's worth and value. Why do you think women struggle with this sense of worthiness and this sense of value?
Oh, my goodness. Well, it doesn't take very long to figure it out. When you listen to the news, when you look at television and how women are regarded, I was happy to see the concert that was led by, Beyonce to support women around the world in education, health, and justice. And, we are the givers of life, and we are oftentimes not reminded of that very divine purpose. And granted, there is the physical birth that women have been bestowed, but I truly believe that women often, can give birth to, to new ideas and life to situations. But if we are disregarded, if we are, treated less than what is our, divine birthright to be, then we become that self-fulfilled prophecy as opposed to embracing the truth of how we were born to serve in this world.
Have you seen the documentary Half the Sky?
No, I haven't.
Oh, wow. I'll have to send you a link to that. It stemmed out of a series of articles that a New York Times reporter did about the conditions of women in other countries. From the articles, they wrote a book, and from the book, they made a documentary that was on PBS. And it's much like what you were saying, the attention that Beyonce brought to some issues. And I think different leaders, whether they're in entertainment like Beyonce or in journalism like the author of Half the Sky, or women like yourself who are leaders of major nonprofit organizations, we all can play a role in bringing attention to social injustice and also opportunity. And so let's talk about that. How did you get into nonprofit work? You've done so many things. Let's recap for our listeners. Got a BA from Spelman College, and you were very active in communications then. I had a smile because I also got involved with the Women in Communications organization right around that time. I interned in Washington, D.C. And so you were in communications as an undergraduate, and then you went on and got your MBA from Washington University, and you got to study overseas and go to China. What was that like, seeing women in another culture?
Well, wow, we see a picture of China as portrayed through the media and the news. It was very enlightening to actually be there, albeit in an academic setting. But while I visited, I was in school at Shanghai, and I wanted to take the time to see more of China, so I went to Beijing and Suzhou. So it was, and Xi'an as well. But it was very interesting to understand more of what our government's relationship is. It's almost with China. It's a little symbiotic, because oftentimes it is portrayed as, well, because they have given, you know, us so much money that they're more or less at this point in control. Well, the truth of the matter is, because of all of the exports that they truly depend on the United States bringing into this country, if anything were to happen to our country, then we're so integrally connected that it would surely impact China as well. As far as, you know, women are concerned, I think it really has more to do with the class of people, because it is a socialist / communist, you know, country. So women are in prominent roles, but it has more to do with, you know, their education level. And education is not afforded to everyone in China. It is very important for children to be able to get an education, because the children are responsible for their grandparents, their parents and their grandparents. So, you know, the elders are looking for their children to support them later in life, and so they don't have the chance to do that if they are not educated and then get into, you know, higher government positions. And the government owns everything, so you know, it's not a matter of, you're either working for the government or you're a farmer, and even if you're a farmer, the government owns that. So so that's where, you know, I saw life in China, and it certainly has its Western influence, but even that aspect of it is a little controlled by the government.
How can we increase cross-cultural understanding between women here and women in other countries, and sort of make more of that global village feeling that women will care and get involved with international organizations or travel abroad or, you know, in some way make a difference? What's your advice there?
Well, I think that's an interesting question, because that goes back to that life-giving connection that I spoke of earlier. In my experience, I have not found that women across the globe have a problem relating to other women. It's almost like an unspoken connection that we have with one another. It is when we get the dynamic between what is happening in the context of a particular society and how women are regarded in that society, where we see, you know, the varying degrees of how we're regarded and, you know, what is tolerated. Now, I go back to the stories in the United States where we are hearing women in the military are, you know, have been assaulted for years, and it's just been swept under the rug. And I remember the arguments of the military when, you know, there was a whole controversy about, well, you know, allowing gays to disclose their sexual preference in the military, and, oh, well, what will that mean? And my immediate thought was, well, wait a minute, you've been assaulting women for years. Why would you jump to conclusion about, you know, there being a problem in this area? But now, you know, as Martin Luther King says, truth crushed to the ground will rise again. And so now it is a topic of discussion. And hopefully with women in the political arena, which is why this is so important that we unite, that they will not let this issue die, and that women will be protected in the military. Kind of
so
got off on a tangent there.
A very interesting point. I love that MLK quote you said, truth crushed to the ground will rise again. I love that. And that women uniting in politics. We've seen a sea change in recent years with the power of the women's vote, with getting more women elected, with getting the current president reelected, and with getting issues discussed. Gun control has been something that's been discussed a lot with some of the, you know, obviously with what happened in Arizona. But what do you see for the future of women uniting through politics and the importance of speaking out and getting involved locally in whatever shape or manner that looks like, whether it's school board or local races or just getting your opinion heard and calling your state representative. Can you talk a little bit about that, the importance of women speaking out to their elected officials and or running for office themselves?
Absolutely. You know, I heard something earlier today that said something may not be illegal, but it may be immoral. And I think that a woman who really understands who she is and the power that she possesses will take the conversation to its moral high ground. And I don't, sometimes when individuals hear that, they, you know, frame it with some prejudices or preconceived notions of what's right and what's wrong. I'm talking about what we all should acknowledge as the well-being of the human race. And so that doesn't come with any, you know, definitions of your red or your blue in your political choices, and, you know, other things that we choose to define ourselves by. So when you talk about, you know, gun control, oftentimes people speak from a fear base, which is why you get controversy. And I believe that in this country, what we're seeing is people are afraid of what they see changing in this country, whether that is, the most recent conversation about what is happening to the family structure when the woman makes more money than the man in the household. And in my opinion, if it's an agreement between that husband, wife, or two partners, then, you know, great. And there shouldn't be any discussion about, oh, my goodness, what's going to happen. And I think it comes from, you know, individuals who are really rooted in a tradition of what they are accustomed to. And when they see it changing, they fear the change, and then they lash out against it. And so, you know, women in politics, in positions of decision-making, will have an opportunity to frame the conversation in ways that, you know, level the playing field and say, you know, this is what is, you know, morally right for humankind. And that's not to say that men, you know, can't do that. But, you know, again, on the issue of gun control, in my mind, I see it as putting in measures that will keep all of us safe. It doesn't mean that the government is going to come into your home and take your gun, no more than we have regulations for drinking and driving. No one comes into your home and takes your alcohol, you know, or seatbelts or stoplights. I mean, they're just regulations that, you know, are in place for a safer community, but I don't see where it violates anybody's rights.
Oh, those are all really interesting points. We are going to take a quick break and then come back, and we're going to be continuing our conversation with Mary Elizabeth Grimes, the state director for the March of Dimes here in Missouri. And we're going to start talking after we come back from break about strategic planning and branding and how to take nonprofits to the next level. It's one of my personal passions. It's something that Mary Elizabeth has had a lot of experience with many different organizations here, and I would say is a world-class expert on that. And we'll be right back. Stay with us. You're listening to Alive to Thrive, and my name is Brenda Fraser, your host today. We'll be right back in just a couple of minutes.
We're open for business. The Greater Good Ministries Book and Gift Shop is now open for business, featuring metaphysical and uplifting books from your favorite authors, such as Doreen Virtue, Wayne Dyer, Michael Edward Owens. We've added handcrafted one-of-a-kind jewelry, pendants, earrings, and bracelets, and now have an exclusive selection of crystals, rocks, and stones for your metaphysical toolbox. Take a look at our hand-dug Arkansas crystals, imported Brazilian crystals, Tibetan crystals, and Reiki healing stones. All of our rocks, crystals, and stones have been Reiki infused, blessed, and cleared, ready for use. You can reserve your copy of Crystal Healing 2012 and Beyond, Reverend B's new book, A Comprehensive Guide of Rocks, Crystals, and Stones for the New Age. Visit ggmradio.com and click Bookshop in the menu bar. That's ggmradio.com.
Yo, what's up? This is the Black Eyed Peas, and we're here for RAD, recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. Music is one of the most important things in our lives, but nothing is more important than life itself. And when you drink and drive, you're risking the life of yourself and the lives of everybody on the road. Don't plan to drive, just plan ahead.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Alive to Thrive with Brenda Fraser on GGM Radio. And now, back to the show.
Hey, welcome back to Alive to Thrive. My name is Brenda Fraser, and with us today is Mary Elizabeth Grimes, the state director for the Greater Missouri Chapter of March of Dimes. And Mary Elizabeth has been the president of her own company called Forward Vision, which was in the marketing and advertising industry and did branding and marketing for various companies and individuals, and also had the good fortune, and I certainly want to talk about this, of working with Jackie Joyner Kersey and the Jackie Joyner Kersey Foundation. And I would love to hear a little bit about that work, Mary Elizabeth. How did you come about working with that foundation? And I assume you've met Jackie and have worked with her?
Well, actually, I was Jackie's manager.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, so I had the pleasure of not only working with her, but being engaged in the work, which is so close to her heart. She wants to always give back to others, but particularly those in her community and the children of her community, which is why she had the Jackie Joyner Kersey Center built. And it houses a boys and girls club, and then she always had her foundation. So I started managing her when she retired from the Olympic competition, but I met her when I was working for the St. Louis Sports Commission as the director of marketing and development, and Jackie was chair of the board. She was the first female chair of that organization's board. And so I had the opportunity to first work with her at the Sports Commission, and then when she retired, she said, I would love for you to come and work for the marketing company that manages me. It was called Elite Sports Marketing and Management. And it was quite the full-time job because I was responsible for everything that had her image and likeness on it. And she was involved in many different things at that time, endorsements and speaking engagements and, as I said, her nonprofit work. So I easily put in 60 to 80 hours a week, which included travel from coast to coast because I did accompany her when she was on the road and making her speeches for various groups.
Wow. Now, share with us a little story from that time period. What was some of the places you went, or is there a specific story? You know, did you meet Oprah, or what kind of exciting events did you go to?
Oh, well, she did commercials and was on morning talk shows, and you know, so when you're managing someone as dynamic as Jackie, your focus is really on making sure that everything goes well for her from beginning to end. So even though there were, you know, celebrities around, my main focus was, you know, Jackie. So I wasn't all starry-eyed with the different things that we did. But I will say, and she was very complimentary a few weeks ago when I saw her at a speaking engagement. Even though I heard Jackie speak many different times, I always, my heart would just, really get full in hearing her tell her story or just say what I thought were just gems to the audience. And she was producing a video presentation about the development of her center and the Boys and Girls Club and the work of the foundation. And I remember her in her presentation saying that all of it, or she, more or less, in all of her vision, was a dream in motion. And I thought that was so appropriate for her, given her athleticism and then, you know, what she was doing after retirement. And so it was my recommendation that that be the title of the video. And cool. And it was a really well-done presentation.
Excellent. Now, I've interviewed other Olympic athletes on another radio show I had a couple of years ago. What are some of the lessons or principles that guided her training to stick with it all the way to Olympic level? Often, you know, there's that inner game of tennis, that inner game of success, where that mental mindset is so important to achieving greatness in whatever field one pursues. So what were some of the principles that you learned from her or that she shared in her preparation to get to the elite level?
Well, starting out, Jackie had very modest means in where she grew up in East St. Louis, and she was very close to her mother, and when you hear her speak, she will oftentimes tell the story of when her mother passed. But her mother was a tremendous influence in her development. As a matter of fact, she told one story about her mother saying to her, "Be beautiful." And she said, "Well, okay, Mom, well, I believe you when I say that I am beautiful." And her mother said, "Well, I don't mean on the outside. I mean on the inside." And her mother encouraged her to be bold. So there was a management for her of being bold and beautiful at the same time. So it meant how you were going to perceive others and how you were going to treat them as you move through life. And that is what helped to carry Jackie, because her mother really didn't quite understand her pursuit of, athletics. But what she did constantly put before her was, who are you as a human being? And
wow.
and that is what carried Jackie throughout her success, is that she, believed in her ability to perform, but then she had other coaches, namely Nino Fanoi as her high school coach, who was still very much a part of her support team. And then her husband, Bobby, who is an outstanding coach. Bobby can assess one's talents, and even though you don't believe it at the time, he will pull it out of you. And that's what he did for Jackie. So, this is somebody who, with all that she accomplished it with asthma. And she could have very easily said, even though I might have the athletic prowess to do these things, I have asthma, and so therefore they will limit me. And so going back to the conversation that we had early in the first session, she did not define herself by her circumstances. She could have said, "I'm from East St. Louis, and, I will always live in this existence." She could have pointed to her her asthma as a possible limitation to what she could do. But she did not allow any of those things to get in her way. She stayed singly focused on the possibilities of winning and doing her very best. And that was her compass, her true north, that led her to be called the greatest female athlete.
Wow, I love that, her true north. So who are some of the other people that have touched your life? Obviously, she in a major way. Other women or authors that have inspired you on your journey?
Well, I was thinking the other day that I have been blessed to have so many wonderful women cross my path in my life. Certainly my mother, who sacrificed a great deal for me to have what I now have. I mean, she was a very big proponent of education. And when I was in college, my father passed, and so my mother worked two jobs to keep me and my sister, who was in medical school, going. And so I have, a great deal of respect and admiration for her. And also what she accomplished in her life. My sister, I have three sisters, but we have a very close family, and they inspire me as well. And I'm still best friends with my best friend from third grade.
that's great.
Yeah. So, again, I have just been very fortunate. And then those women that I have not had the opportunity to meet, but what their contributions have been and their shoulders I stand on. I spoke about Harriet Tubman, and, this is a woman who was a slave and freed herself, and that was not good enough for her. I mean, some people would say, well, you know, I'm out and not look back. But she made the journey on the Underground Railroad several times because she wanted to reach back and help others. And, you know, there's a quote that I like of hers where she says, I could have freed more people, but they didn't know they were slaves. And, you know, and I think that that speaks volumes for, you know, one's ability to move beyond the state of their circumstances into the vastness of their possibilities.
I love that. And I was reading, wasn't there an article recently in the paper about a building that actually they said is still standing, is a building that she was said to have visited. And I think building a museum or a statue in her memory. Do you know?
No, I'm not familiar with that, but certainly she would be deserving of it. Yeah,
she's one of my heroes as well, and I think I saved the article. But I think they are building a statue in Virginia or Delaware, somewhere along the Underground Railroad path, and marking the trail. It's fascinating that. You know, there has been so many amazing stories of women that have come before us, and I love that you say that about standing on the shoulders of our ancestors and others that have gone before, because I was recently at an event with Lisa Nichols, and she was sharing a story about how she was invited to be on Oprah when the movie The Secret hit big, and her mother... her grandmother was traveling with her and reminded her to tip the housekeeping staff that, you know, that Lisa was only there because of the efforts and sacrifices of the women that had gone before her to pave the way for her to be where she was in terms of, you know, having written books and been in movies and been on Oprah. And it was just a powerful story. And I think sometimes people forget that there were a lot of sacrifices by a lot of women before our generation, certainly with the suffragettes just less than 100 years ago, you know, where perhaps our grandmothers didn't even vote. I don't think my grandmother ever got the chance to vote. And my mother was born the year prior to suffrage passing. So I think we forget how recent, you know, certain gains have been for women. And so let's talk about, you know, women in management, nonprofit management specifically. You have raised millions of dollars for various charities and have gone on to make huge change at the local and state level for lots of great causes. Let's talk about that. What have you found as sort of important in raising money, specifically in terms of the role creating vision plays, you know, in launching new campaigns and influencing a group of people to go in a common direction?
Sure. So being at the March of Dimes, it is an outstanding organization. It's 75 years young this year. And I will share with your listeners some of the contributions from the organization, and there may be an aha for some of them, because when it comes to branding, this is an organization that has some awareness within a certain target group, but it is the only organization that touches every single person. So what I mean by that is 75 years ago, FDR had polio and wanted to raise money to help find a cure for polio, which that happened. So March of Dimes as an organization is the only organization that has had an initial purpose and actually accomplished that purpose and then went on to do other things. And so we don't have polio today in this country because of March of Dimes. So that's one thing that everyone can be thankful for. The other thing is March of Dimes wanted to focus on the development of children, starting with infancy. And it was noted that the prematurity rate was on the rise. And so the money that was raised for March of Dimes initially, while it went into polio and finding a cure and birth defects, it then started to expand into what is causing prematurity rates for babies. And so why would that be important for everybody? Well, the economic impact for prematurity today is $26 billion. So that is affecting anybody who is an employer and has health care plans and, you know, anyone who is not getting the right care as a mother in her not only when she is carrying the baby, but there is importance in preconception care. And that, too, was a focus that March of Dimes brought to bear. For example, there was a prevalence of spina bifida in certain parts of the country. And with the research dollars, it was discovered that it was because women didn't have enough folic acid in their system prior to conception. So today, everyone is eating whole grain products with folic acid added to it because of the March of Dimes. Our research pinpointed what the issue was, but then we legislated to have it added to whole grain products because we knew we couldn't legislate someone's diet.
Interesting.
Yeah,
sort of slip it in there one way or the other. That's awesome.
Yeah. So if you look at your bread, So if you look at your bread and pasta, the reason folic acid is there is because of the March of Dimes. And so now today, March of Dimes is the silent ally when every baby is born. All the newborn screening and the Apgar scores, and there was, because of March of Dimes, there are NICUs in hospitals today, whereas babies born premature were put in the general population and didn't receive the care that they needed. And there are other, you know, breakthroughs in research that help babies that are premature, but also help babies to be healthy. So simply put, March of Dimes is an organization that helps all mothers to have a healthy pregnancy and all babies to have a healthy start. So on the branding aspect of it, now that I've shared some of those things with you, you know, people, as you said, well, wow, I didn't know that. And so in my role here, because I believe that it impacts your ability to fundraise, people will support those causes that they have feel aligned to or a connection to or just, you know, feel that it is important for one reason or another to, you know, lend support. And so it is my job, I believe, as with the support of the organization, to find that value proposition that addresses certain stakeholders as to why they should engage, you know, with this organization. The business community can see it as a part of their wellness component, you know, because that's how they see heart and cancer and diabetes. Well, they should see prematurity in the same way because there are such things as million-dollar babies, and if that ever hits their health plan, they will certainly feel it if they don't see it. So we want to make sure that their employees of childbearing age are informed, and there are so many women in the workforce today that employers should not let this fly below the radar, that they should, you know, raise the awareness of what's going on with premature rates. So in our communications plan, we are employing a lot of different marketing strategies and tactics to raise the awareness, the overall awareness of March of Dimes as an organization, which then will encourage people to support us financially.
And so this being your 75th anniversary, what are some of the anniversary celebrations that are taking place throughout the year?
Well, we have all of our fundraising events, and at each fundraising event, there is an element of our anniversary celebration. I will point to one particular thing that we are doing in November. Every year we have, it is National Prematurity Awareness Month. And in St. Louis, we have Washington University School of Medicine. And when you're giving to a charity, you oftentimes ask the question, well, where is our money going? And because we have this outstanding institution located in St. Louis, March of Dimes has given millions of dollars to researchers that have been researchers at Washington University. So we raised about $3 million in the state of Missouri, and most of our money goes to our national office, and then it is redistributed throughout the country through grants. And so that's how Washington University gets a lot of its funding from March of Dimes. And I would say, just as an aside, there's a terrible misinformed email going around that's saying March of Dimes is named that because only a dime of your contribution goes directly to the mission. And so I just want to clarify that 80% of every dollar goes to the mission in this organization. It's not a dime. So just wanted to clarify that.
I think sometimes when there's an organization or a business that's successful, people want to bring it down. And I don't know why that is, but whether, you know, if there's success, there's always other issues trying to counterplay that. So, but the record speaks for itself, what the organization has done. You have a beautiful, colorful website. I do want to encourage listeners to go to marchofdimes.com and look at the various articles. There's articles there about postpartum depression, and that we could do a whole program just on that, and healthy alternatives instead of medication, and, you know, a lot of, I love that you brought up earlier in the program about the role good nutrition plays with even prenatal health and preconception health. But there's such a lack of information, I find, around good nutrition. And, you know, more and more is coming out in magazines and different articles. But by and large, there are a lot of people that don't realize even, you know, what the healthy limits are. Vitamin D, and so many people are deficient in vitamin D and various things. So I like that. You know, that you're encouraging, you know, that you're not just an organization. I think that maybe there might be a perception that you're an organization that focuses on raising money for research, but you have so many practical life skill information on your website. So, and a way for people to volunteer, real easy. They can sign up to be a volunteer. They can sign up to learn more information about you know, newborn screening and baby health, and of course to donate and support. And, you know, every donation amount makes a difference, whether it's $10, $10,000, everything in between. Often I think people think, oh, my little bit won't help. You know what? It's all the little bits that do add up to help. So what are you doing new and different in terms of fundraising? We only have a few minutes left, but in terms of how have you approached fundraising for the March of Dimes that is different than what they were doing prior to your leadership?
The main thing is sitting down with our the companies that support us and approach them as strategic partners. You know, I say to them, we really appreciate your money and thank you for your longtime support, but you are not just a contributor to this organization. You are a partner. And so since we are both in business, we should make this mutually beneficial. So let's talk about a strategic plan that works for you and for us in our engagement together. And oftentimes what I found is nonprofit organizations think as nonprofit organizations, i.e.
Yeah.
charities. I'm a charity, so write me a check. But we are in business to make money for the causes that we represent. And so if we are not approaching our way of fundraising and managing ourselves as a business, as a for-profit business, then we really miss the mark.
That is so important. And, you know, yesterday, Joe Reagan, who's the regional director, the president for the regional Chamber of Commerce for St. Louis, was talking about that to a nonprofit audience, you know, that we have to move beyond scarcity thinking, that we have to think more like a business, how to improve the quality of life for the region and collaborate. And you talked about some of your collaborations, like with the Wash School School of Medicine, and I'm sure that approach, which I have also coached and trained various nonprofits on, to be strategic, to approach of the self-interest of the business partner. What can we, as the nonprofit, bring to you? You know, and every business wants to improve their bottom line, and if it's a win-win and both sides are getting their needs met, it's going to be a stronger relationship that will last more than just a one-time gift centered around a special event or something. So that's
exactly.
Fantastic. So you've seen a lot of increase in support from the corporate community?
Well, we are in a rebuilding phase in the chapter, and so we expect that it will certainly yield much greater outcomes for us, and not only that, sustainability for our future growth.
Fantastic. Well, any closing thoughts in the last couple of minutes? Call it to action or something in the next 30 to 60 days?
Well, you know, I guess I could plug March of Dimes, but I'm all about people. And, you know, the one thing that I would share is there is the saying that says, when you know better, you do better. And I was talking to my daughter and said, you know, people know right from wrong, and it doesn't really compel them to necessarily do what's right all the time. But when you know who you are and you want to honor yourself, it does guide you into what is in your best interest, and you see things as a whole and not a fractured perspective. And so I would just remind all of your listeners that you are enough.
Oh, that was perfect. Thank you, Mary Elizabeth. That was just a perfect way to end. You are enough. And with that, I want to thank you very much from the bottom of my heart. You are just an incredible person, and I'm so glad our paths crossed. And have a fantastic weekend, and thank you for participating with Alive to Thrive and shining your light on others.
Thank you so much. It was a privilege and an honor to spend this time with you and your listeners today.
Thanks. Have a good time. Talk to you later.
All right. Bye-bye.